Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us on the program this month. My guest today is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can email questions to ask at WBAA.org, or you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good to talk to you again. Sorry I had to be away for our last couple of shows, but I listened intently to your conversations with Chris Marisiewicz when I got a chance, and good to have a chance to be back on the phone with you.
Well, it's good to be with you, Stan, and I have to say, Chris did a great job in your stead. It's good to have you back, and greetings to everyone out there from Frankfort. Thanks for listening in to our program today.
Well, let me start with a question that's come in from a listener since you were on the show last. Linda called in the intervening month wondering what plans the city has to offer or maybe even mandate continuing education for city employees, particularly for public safety employees like police and fire.
Continuing education in terms of training or secondary education in terms of college?
I have to say she was not specific. Let's open it up broadly, but I think perhaps the training part, especially where the public safety officials are concerned, is perhaps a more salient way to go down the path.
Sure. So we have a great training program out of the FPD, and that's all ran by really our chief operating officer, Scott Shoemaker, who's our deputy chief of police. And what we have open to our officers is multiple online training programs that they can get on and go through several different scenarios in several different disciplines of public safety. And then also our SWAT team engages on a regular basis with the county, utilizes multiple training facilities throughout the community. For example, if we have a home that's been condemned or an older building that's getting ready to be torn down, the SWAT team and our officers will use those facilities to do live action scenarios. Here in the past year, we've also rented for about a 2-week time span a simulator that can simulate different events. And then the officers have a wide range of weaponry that they can actually use in this simulator that would actually be like a real life scenario. And then someone is behind a computer, and based upon how that officer engages with that situation, they can alter what happens in that particular instance. We also have sent officers, of course, as you well know, to the National FBI Academy. So those officers that do have a yearning to go and get national training, we try to open up those opportunities for them as it makes sense. And then we've also sent officers down south to Florida for actual specialty drug recognition programs. So these individuals are trained to be able to detect the slightest movements that or actions that someone who is under the influence of heroin or narcotics would display. And so all of these opportunities are present for our officers, and we're always looking for more opportunities to give them cutting-edge 21st century police training opportunities so they can serve our citizens. And I think what all this has culminated in is our city being named now in the top 50 safest cities in Indiana. That's the first time we've been on that list in a long time, and that's all thanks to our officers, their hard work, and then the citizen engagement that our community has partaken in.
While we're on the subject, we reported earlier this week about your city's police force encouraging people to sign up for the NICSL public safety system. This is the one that's used by the state police and a lot of other municipal agencies around the state. Your city had used that service, then you got away from using it for a while. How did that happen?
Well, we've always utilized NICSL. I think it's just the depth and breadth that we've utilized NICSL. NICSL's a great tool. We've had it in our cars for as long as I've been mayor, and our officers use NICSL to tap in and to look at information, especially when they're dealing with people on the street. But NICSL can be much, much more than that. We can utilize NICSL to reach out and do a better job of communicating and informing the people that we serve regarding what's going on around them, even utilizing it to the extent that tips or advice from citizens can come in. More than 7,200 government agencies around the country rely on NICSL for community engagement and emergency communications. And we're proud to say that Frankfort is now one of those communities. It's free. It's easy to sign up. People can either text 888-777. Their zip code, they text to that number. So here in Frankfort, that zip code would be 46041. Or they can just pop over to the city website, frankfort-in.gov, and they can sign up for Nixle Reports that way. But we're really encouraging people to utilize this free and easy service, and it will give us the ability to keep you informed in a specific neighborhood or a specific area of the city, heaven forbid an emergency event were to occur.
So we were told, our reporter Charlotte Tuggle was told, that, you know, as the city and the county went to kind of a combined dispatch system, which is something that a lot of cities and counties have done around Indiana, that Nixle, sort of the use of it by the public, sort of fell by the wayside. Is that an accurate descriptor?
We're trying to ramp up our efforts to utilize Nixle to its fullest ability. And I think the way that we were utilizing Nixle, we could be getting much more out of it. And that's why, especially a cornerstone of our administration, not only being communications but citizen voice, we're paying for this service anyway. Our taxpayers are paying for it. We needed to tap in to this ability that Nixle has, not only for our officers to communicate to one another and look into criminal suspects should that situation arise, but also utilize it as a communication tool to the individuals that we serve. So we are ramping things up from where they have been, and I hope that we're doing this and we can lead by example, and then that ultimately leads to the entire community really taking a page out of this book and doing the same thing.
We've talked a lot in recent months about your city and others, especially in this area of the state, having kind of a hard time trying to get a handle on drug crime. Your city's police chief, Troy Bacon, mentioned that as one use of Nixle in Frankfort, one thing he'd like to see that technology particularly focus on. So let me ask you, if that's the case, what does success look like in terms of using that system to help interdict or track drug cases?
Well, I think number one, I think people just being aware of situations that are going on. So if we have a SWAT call out to a certain area of the city and we believe narcotics or methamphetamine is at the core of that, being able to communicate to that citizenry that, number one, there's something going on in the neighborhood, so please get your children, bring them inside, keeping people safe. That's number one. Number two, I know that there's access, and I know that there is a portal for individuals to interact with us. And, you know, some people, they feel uncomfortable picking up the phone and actually calling the police. And in today's society with smartphones, we can all text message nowadays. That's something that's becoming quite common, especially for the millennials. So, you know, what we communicate to people is if you're seeing traffic at odd hours at a home in your neighborhood, or the windows are open for a prolonged period of time and you're sensing a funny smell in your backyard that you just simply don't know where it's coming from, maybe it smells like ammonia, having this tool for people to simply send us a simple text message to let us know, hey, there's something going on here, something doesn't feel quite right, I think that all adds up to success. And it makes me happy and it makes me sad, because every day, Stan, I pick up the paper and I read 4 people arrested for drug dealing, 4 people arrested for using overdoses, and it's all tragic. But at the same time, those arrests are showing that our police officers are out. They're making a difference. You can't police your way and you can't arrest your way out of this situation, but we can intervene. And again, I believe that's why Frankfort was put in the top 50 safest cities in the state of Indiana. And with this tool, this 21st century tool, and increasing community engagement and communication, I think is going to lead to more of that and to a safer city ultimately here in Frankfort.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Please call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. So earlier this month, a number of roads in Frankfort and Clinton County were underwater because of all of the heavy rains we got in this neck of the woods. Your city got hit hard. So did Kokomo. There were places in Montgomery County that had some flooding problems as well. I wondered if that made you sort of reprioritize or look differently at future road work you had planned, if you saw that there were problems you didn't perhaps know were as grave as they were.
Well, I can tell you that I did receive several calls from residents on the east side thanking the city and the county for the retention ponds that were built, gosh, close to 4 years ago now. East side drainage, as it was commonly referred to, was a 50-year problem. Topographically, Frankfort sets in a bit of a swell. So, one, that's pretty good for tornadic activity. Most of the time, things pass over us from that standpoint. But in terms of flooding, it can be a nightmare. With the amount of rain that we received 2 weeks ago, had we not partnered with the county 5 years ago to build the east side stormwater retention facility, those homes would have been underwater, no doubt about it. But in talking to our surveyor, our county officials, and monitoring the situation ourselves, those retention ponds did their job and kept those people safe and their assets safe on the east side of the city. That was also one of our first looks at South Mash Road and the new stormwater retention program put into that road underneath the infrastructure, tying in with east side drainage, and it seemed to perform fairly well. Another area of the city that we kept a close eye on was the area around Dorner Park and South Clay Street. Up until the point of last year, individuals in that neighborhood had no stormwater drainage whatsoever, but our utility service board put the stormwater fees that we are all assessed as homeowners and business owners in this city to good use. But I think what this shows us is we've got to continue to stay ahead of the curve. For example, with Washington Avenue, any time that we're going to be digging up a road and rebuilding it, we need to be looking at utility infrastructure underneath it. If money is going to be spent and regulations are going to be fought through, you might as well think about not just the roadway, but what's underneath it, and that includes stormwater. So overall, we were fairly happy with how things went. Prairie Creek, obviously our main drainage ditch through town, seemed to hold the water. It did get pretty high. But my eye is now on Washington Avenue next year, making sure when we rebuild that road that we think properly about stormwater, just like we did with South Mash and the east side retention facility, and hopefully that will lead to better results down the road for that area of the city.
We've also talked on this program in recent months about the personnel overhaul that's happened at your city's utilities. How did the new people who kind of got this this acid test a little bit a couple of weeks ago handle it? How did your city's utilities function in terms of the new leadership trying to deal with whatever problems you might have had from flooding or electrical outages, et cetera?
I can honestly say with a full and honest heart, the past 2 months in our utilities have been the smoothest and the most effective and the most professional since I've been in office. And I say that because I honestly think that the restructuring, the bringing in of an industrial-minded business VP and Todd Corey as our general manager really gave our utilities a sense of leadership and a sense of continuity that it has longed for since the 1980s. Todd was obviously baptized by fire with all of these heavy rains, but he worked well with his department heads. He worked very well with the utility service board. They did have a situation on Williams Road that they're continuing to work on today. And the great thing about it is, here's Todd Corey. He's the general manager. You know, he wears suits to work every day. But I go out there, and he's knee-deep in mud, down in a hole with the guys working. And I think that shows a tremendous sense of leadership on his end. And we are very pleased with how that restructuring has went. And in the long term, I believe it's going to mean better productivity, more efficiency, money savings, and ultimately better service to our ratepayers.
While we're on the subject of utilities, I see that your utility service board is also looking at what to do with an aging water treatment plant. Is that right?
That is correct. We have an older treatment plant on McKinley Avenue, and currently we are going through a feasibility study. It was approved through our utility service board this past week to look at one of two options. Number one, is there an investment to be made to upgrade this antiquated plant and or upgrade the most recent plant built out on Armstrong Road just south of our industrial park, increase the capacity of that plant and consolidate things. And so I think this is just a good step of due diligence, more to come on this, but I can tell you that the McKinley Avenue plant does need to be looked at. It's very antiquated. Water, obviously, with everything that's happened up in Flint, Michigan, and across our country in terms of water contamination over the past few years, it's very important that we stay on the front end of these things and that we're performing our due diligence to carry out studies, keeping an eye on these things, upgrading infrastructure when it needs upgraded, and consolidating when we can consolidate to save money and to serve our ratepayers better. And I think that this feasibility study, it works into that long-term vision.
What's your hunch about what'll happen, rehabilitation versus reconstruction versus consolidation? Do you have any sense of how this might turn out?
Well, I think we've got to look at our workforce. I think we've got to look at do we have situations where there will be retirements in the future? And if so, you know, I'm a big believer, especially now that we have an HR director, in no way do we want to go across the city and say, you're laid off. I'm not getting at that at all. But as the CEO of an organization that has to look after taxpayers and ratepayers, as you go through a time where people retire and you have attrition, can you look at restructuring the organization to say maybe we don't need to refill that position once someone retires? And maybe this is a situation with a good investment, especially with technology, automatic meter readers, SCADA networks that can now be built into utilities. Maybe it is time to look at consolidating, updating our Armstrong plan, and over time, with attrition, maybe become more efficient, rein in our costs on a daily basis, which in turn will be able to keep our rates a little more steady moving into the future and hopefully halt them from increasing. So things like that go through my mind. There's a lot of questions to be answered, but we're definitely going to approach it from a business mindset. And I think having Todd Corey, who in his former life was VP of a major industry here in Frankfort, he brings that business mindset to the table. And in today's day and age, to stay competitive and cost effective, I think that's the way you need to think.
When you've got a situation like this where rehabilitation is going to be expensive, how do you decide between upgrading existing infrastructure or perhaps building from scratch, especially if you think the city's population is going to grow in the coming years like you've talked about on this program?
Well, I think you have to look at the Armstrong plan. One of the biggest things I've learned is in any type of development, you have to be able to acquire land at a fair price. Having land in friendly hands and having the ability to expand a situation, whether it be a water treatment plant or an industry, land acquisition can get really pricey. Our utilities had the foresight with the Armstrong plant. We have plenty of land and a little bit of acreage around that facility, and that plant was actually built to be expanded. So I think that was good foresight, and that was before I was mayor. I was still in college at the time when that was built. So I think that direction had already been thought about, and then I think you have to look at the McKinley Avenue plant, and I don't know if there is enough land space to work around and effectively rehabilitate and expand that to meet the needs here in the 21st century. So I think that's one thing that you do look at, and I think the Armstrong site, just for our ratepayers to know, I think it is ripe for expansion. I think it was built with expansion in mind. And, you know, water, it's one of our strongest suits here in the city. I think we've got the capacity to push out 9 to 11 million gallons of water a day. And from an economic development standpoint, that's important for industries to know. Wet industries such as food manufacturing, food processing, plants like Frito-Lay, they know that they can locate in Frankfort, they can expand in Frankfort, and we can give them the water they need to make their product. So looking into this, I think also from an economic development perspective, it keeps us on the cutting edge and continues to give us the ability to compete in the region to bring not only jobs, but good-paying jobs here to Frankfort and Clinton County.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Call in questions at 765-496-1999. Email them also to ask@wbaa.org. It's been a couple of months since we've talked about your city's hearing authority and its efforts trying to clean up derelict properties in town. And I see where you've recently had some meetings with the owners of a couple of homes that have apparently been in violation of some sort of ordinance for as many as 6 years. Is that right?
Well, we've been going through processes with two particular properties, one on South Jackson Street and one on South Clay Street, for about 6 years now, where we have continuously went through the property maintenance violation process, sending out fines, going through city court, attempting to get these individuals to clean their properties up. These two properties, there have been dozens of police calls for various reasons. And these are two properties in two neighborhoods that are relatively stable. People do a good job of upkeeping their properties, and enough is enough, plain and simple. And that's why we have the hearing authority. So we brought the owner of these two properties before the hearing authority this past week. I was fairly forceful with the situation, and I'm still a little bit upset about this situation. We need to see some progress here. The neighborhoods are suffering because of these two properties. I've gotten calls about them. I know constituents are concerned. It's depressing property values. So I went out, and what we're going to do is we listed some items that we want this individual to address right away. We're going to put all of that in writing. We're going to have another public hearing a couple weeks from now, which the public and the media are welcome to attend, and we will be delivering this paperwork in writing, specifically the things that we want to see upgraded and progressed upon in regards to these two properties. And if substantial completion of these items aren't made within 30 days of that hearing, we're going to go to the full breadth of our fining capability, and that's $5,000 per property. That's how serious we are about this. The people in these neighborhoods have invested in their homes. They're trying to raise their kids there, and there's no reason that an individual should be letting their property degrade in this manner. And it would be different if they were working with us. We're all about it. I mean, if someone comes to us and for an unforeseen reason says, you know what, I've had some hard times, I will work on this over the next 6 months, the next year, here's my plan, here's what I'm going to get done when, but we simply have seen no progress at all in housing in our city. If we don't stabilize our housing and we don't improve our housing and draw more people to live to Frankfort in the long term, we won't be able to create more jobs here. We won't be able to create a better quality of place. So, you know, I want this to also be a message to other individuals out there, landlords that maybe own property in Frankfort that live in other states that just look at these homes as cash ATMs. You're going to be held to a standard because enough is enough, and we're tired of it, and this is just one example of us trying to hold these individuals accountable because I believe that's what our citizens are calling for at this time, and rightfully so.
All right, so let me ask, how did it take 6 years? I mean, how if you've got thousands of dollars of fines on these two properties, how, and you say they sort of stand out like a sore thumb in relatively nice neighborhoods, how did it take 6 years before you decided that you would think about going to the full fining capability that you have?
Well, number one, keep in mind that our hearing authority was just established a couple years ago now, 2 or 3 years ago. I believe when you and I first started doing this show together, that was actually the first topic I think we ever talked about. The hearing authority was something that we never had established in the city of Frankfort. So to establish it, to create a set of bylaws, to understand the authority that the hearing authority has, to work with our attorney to set things up properly to protect our city, that took a little time. Also, when I first came into office, we had a set of property maintenance codes that were outdated. We didn't have the international set of property maintenance codes. We had to go through a year-long process to update that legislation, get it passed through the council. So we have been utilizing the tools at our disposal over this amount of time, and we've tried to work with these individuals. We don't want to be known as the community that doesn't work with people, that simply comes in and uses the full force of the law right away, not giving anyone the benefit of the doubt.
All right, so let me ask you about that for a second.
We've tried to do that.
Let me ask you about that.
We're at the point in time now that there does need to be a line drawn in the sand, and that message was sent loud and clear this past Monday evening.
So I know there's a fine line between seeming like a kind of welcoming, homey community and taking a hard line on how a property looks or beautification, but it seems to me that there are plenty of neighborhoods and plenty of planned communities around the state that have what might on paper look like kind of draconian rules that they make their residents follow, but a lot of them are in the service of lending a sense of law and order, making sure things look nice, making sure there's upkeep. Couldn't your city be run in a similar way in hopes of attracting people to whom that such an attention to detail would appeal.
And we do that, and I think we do that quite well. One example is the program that we just started partnering with the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis, and that is senior citizens that come to us that make 80% of the average median income that are in fixed incomes. We have the ability to give them grants up to $7,500 to re-side their homes, put new roofs on their homes, put a new water heater in their home, new windows. We have our Neighbors Helping Neighbors program where we get local churches involved in helping people that are perhaps disabled or going through an illness. These particular situations that we're talking about right now are rental situations. Individuals own these homes that don't live in this community and that look at these homes as cash ATMs, and they're getting rent checks on a monthly basis. And then instead of properly taking those funds and putting them back into a product that's going to help our city, it's taking advantage of our city. And that's where we do have these tools like the hearing authority. We like to use the property maintenance codes first because sometimes we can see results with the property maintenance codes, but over the years that just simply hasn't worked. So instead of giving up on it, we're going to this last resort, this last route called the hearing authority, and we will see progress here. We're not going to stop until we do, and that's why we went to this past Monday night.
Do you think this is a sign that the city has to sort of put people like this on a shorter leash?
I think the notice has been put out that they are on a shorter leash. I think the message has been sent now, especially after this past Monday night, that you either take care of your property and be responsible with your property or figure something out. Maybe find a developer that will take care of it. This individual is even very open with us, saying if he could find someone to sell these properties to, he would in a heartbeat. You know, another thing that we're getting on this year is we went down and we went to our legislators and we had them put an amendment into state law that's now going to allow third-class cities across the state of Indiana to create land banks. So we as a community are actually going to have a land bank where we can bring vulnerable properties into this land bank that are tax delinquent, for example, and then a group of community volunteers in an open and transparent process can go out and find proper developers to come in that's going to have the best city, the best of the city in mind, and hopefully turn these homes into great single-family dwelling homes where young professionals can come to our community, raise their families, and have a good job here. So the housing front, we're hitting it on many different angles, from the hearing authority to property maintenance to the Federal Home Loan Bank to our community land bank. But it's important to keep in mind we didn't get into this place overnight, and we're not going to get out of it overnight, but it is one of our main focuses right now is progressing our housing here in the city of Frankfort.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that unfortunately is all the time we have, but thanks, as always, for your time. We look forward to doing it again next month.
Stan, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. And be sure to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. If you'd like to send a question to him in advance of that, you can email us. Ask@WBAA.org is our email address. And you can tweet questions @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.